Following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and I once again have my associate, Mr. Dan DuBose, CPA, joining me. Dan, are you already on?
I'm on. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you. And it's another week into the craziness that we call Washington. Right? It's hard to imagine just how much more confused and messed up the leaders of our government are, and it doesn't just stop with financial stuff, right? I guess you're watching the the document scandal unfold before our eyes, and it's interesting how quick our focus changes, isn't it, with what's going on up there, Dan?
Yeah, they do anything to get you off of anything that's a major, such as a budget deficit potential and such as that, won't they?
Yeah, I'll tell you, it makes you would think inflation is like a yesteryear problem. You know, it's not anything that's bothering us today, right? It's Corvettes and archives and presidential libraries and all that, and you know, it's amazing to me that in an organization the size of the U.S. government, they have any clue of where anything is. And when you look at how bad the balance sheet of the nation is managed, I can only imagine things that are, in my mind, less important. Certainly not unimportant, but less important. In any event, let me just say that for those of you that are tuning in, maybe for the first time especially, but even those that are ongoing listeners, we're going to talk about concepts, tax concepts, investment concepts, real estate concepts today. And before you go out and do anything or react to a sound bite that you thought you heard and think it applies to you, please check with your existing advisors who hopefully are fully aware of your current facts and circumstances and can confirm or otherwise alert you that maybe what you heard does not apply, or maybe it does apply. And if that's the case, well, then great. Consider moving forward with, you know, someone that's familiar with your facts and circumstances at your side. If you don't have someone that meets that criteria, well, then certainly feel free to go to our website at beaplanner.com. That's beaplanner.com. And you can do a couple things there. You can either fill out our client intake forms. You'll see a link there at the top right of the website for doing that, so that we can learn more about your specific facts and circumstances. And then if you'd like to schedule a call, you can use or click the call link right next to the forms link and book a call with us. Dan and I would be happy to discuss your form submissions, or if you just have a planning topic you want to discuss to see if we might have the requisite skill sets or knowledge base to help you, feel free just to go ahead and schedule a call. And then throughout the show, if you'd like to ask a question or comment, you can text us at 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to info at npross.com. And I'll try to monitor the tech stream. And if it's something that's relevant, we're happy to bring it up on the show. If not, we'll circle back to you later in the week. And you can call us on that number as well, obviously, but we're not going to answer the phone during the show. So anyway, Dan, any news this week that we need to cover before we get started?
Of course, there's talk about the deficit potential for the year 2023 again. You know, we've got a budget deficit that has been, I guess, passed. And we're going to spend that $1.7 trillion that we authorized right there at the end of December. It's going to run us up to another, 10 or 11% deficit for the year 2023 year end. So, yeah, government's still out there spending your money.
Well, I'd like to raise something that, you know, it's not really news, but it is something that I do my darndest to keep it in front of clients and listeners, and that is the prospect of undertaking Roth conversions, or for those of you that have significant self-employed income, the ability to do a mega backdoor Roth contribution, which gets you up to, if you're age 50 and older, it gets you up to, what's the limit this year, Dan? I think it's 67, or for 2022. 67,500.
67,500 for 2022. Yeah.
Right, and lest you think that we're not able to do 2022 contributions, we still are, up through, if you extend your return, the entity that you're sponsoring your 401 plan under, your self-directed 401, solo K would be the marketing term. Well, then you have until either September 15th or October 15th, depending on the kind of entity or the type of entity that it is. S-Corps are September 15th. LLCs that are multi-member are September 15th. And then single-member LLCs or disregarded are or Schedule Cs, sole proprietorships, are October 15th. And Dan, you know, the other thing that I guess it's worth mentioning is that we still have the ability to do significant Roth conversion amounts. You know, the Build Back Better Act tried to do away with the mega backdoor Roth, and then simultaneously tried to reduce the number of folks or the qualification for folks that wanted to do a Roth conversion. And walk us through, Dan, why we want to do a Roth conversion. You've already tangentially talked about the deficit and the you know, the spending that we're doing, but generally give us the several reasons you might want to do a Roth conversion if you're sitting, as most Americans are, with pre-tax dollars in a 401k.
With a Roth, you know, conversion to a Roth from an IRA or 401, you can do that and pay the tax today and not pay tax when you take that money out many years hence. You know, you're talking about a 50-year-old person putting money into a Roth, or 59-and-a-half person putting money into a Roth IRA 401k. You can take that money out when you're getting your retirement days of at zero tax rate. And we know, we feel like tax rates are going up, so pay that tax rate at that maybe a 12, 22, 20% rate today and take it out at 0%. Versus what we think is going to be at least a 30% tax rate at the very lowest, I think, one of these days for the individual. I mean, zero is still the lowest, but with ones that have income, it's going to be probably 30% or higher coming. And then I think not too many years. It's got to. Tax rates have got to go up. They've just got to, because the deficit is running too much.
Yeah, tax rates wouldn't have to go up if spending would go down, but what do you think the odds of that are, right? I mean, there are two ways to skin the cat, so to speak. Forgive the reference for any of our PETA listeners. But in any event, the crowd in Washington doesn't understand what the words deficit reduction mean or less spending. And so, yes, if you're going to continue to spend the way we are, then at some point, most economists project 2029 or 2030, we will have spent the last piece of the discretionary budget, which a lot of that's borrowed, right? And we won't be able to sell T-bills because we won't be able to fund 100% of the debt service on the outstanding debt. So if you don't think rates are going up, that's fine. Keep thinking that. And at some point, it'll catch you unawares. And by the way, if for no other reason besides the ability to get tax-free income out of your retirement funds, think about not paying tax on your Social Security. A lot of folks think, oh, well, you know, I'm going to be making less money in in retirement, therefore I won't have to pay tax on my Social Security. Well, they're forgetting that the RMDs that currently have to start at age 72, I believe, depending on when your birthdays are coming up, because we just had the Secure Act 2 increase those ages depending on, again, birth date. I don't have those dates in my head, but they start to go up to 73 and then on up. I believe they top out at 75 at some point. But, you know, I was talking this past week with a client that has, I believe they have $3 to $4 million in their what would be a self-directed 401, and we were talking about RMDs if at some point they truly retire. You know, they still have a side gig that creates income, which is necessary, by the way, and there's many things one can do to qualify for that particular structure. But bottom line is their RMDs were nearly $300,000 a year. Think about that, Dan.
Yeah,
you know, what's your tax bite?
Yeah, 30% plus tax rate.
Yeah, what's your married filing joint tax rate on $300,000 in taxable income? You know, you're some on average, you're somewhere in the low to mid 20s, I believe. I didn't look at the chart. I know incrementally you're pretty darn close to the 32%. Bracket, but
that means $100,000 of tax just on that $300,000 that could have been avoided at some point if they'd have planned way back in their earlier age.
Well, and 30% times about $40,000 to $45,000 of Social Security, that's another what, $12,000 that gets paid in tax.
Not
and
to
it's
mention
it's
your
a
IRMA
silent
tax.
Yeah, it's kind of a stealth tax that, you know, multiply that out over 30 years. Well, maybe not 30 years because the RMD won't be as much in the earlier years. But bottom line is, and of course, you may not live to be 100 on the top end. But bottom line is, it's a lot of extra tax that gets paid. And you would sidestep all of that if you converted to Roth at what we think are the lowest tax rates probably in our lifetimes. Maybe for those of us that are, you know, 75 and older, the rates were higher when you were a youngster. But for those that are my age, I'm 62, these are the lowest rates in our lifetime. And so why not take advantage of these rates now to get your Roth conversion done and pay in the taxes due at, you know, a lower rate. And you know, for those of you that are also listening to us weekly talk about the real estate private partnership syndication market, what a wonderful marriage when you roll your money out of the big company 401k, you invest it in real estate private partnerships and a self-directed 401, which escapes, by the way, the UBIT tax that your IRA will pay if you choose to simply enroll it to an IRA and invest it, and you'll leak tax dollars along the way, depending on how you manage those gains and losses. But bottom line is, when we value Roth converted assets or assets that we're getting ready to convert from pre-tax to Roth, if we're invested in private company partnerships, unlike what your funds would be invested in if they were at Fidelity or Charles Schwab or UBS, where you're invested in index funds, mutual funds, stocks, bonds, etc., the fair market value of those assets is readily determined. You can look at the close of business each day on the stock exchanges and see what your funds are worth. Well, when you invest in private company partnerships, you lose a lot of the financial attributes that you have with publicly traded markets. You have, in most cases, zero liquidity. You can't just sell your interest in a real estate private partnership. You've got to wait until the partnership decides they're going to exit. And you have no control, no majority voting control. You may not get distributions when you performed or projected you would. You may not be able to rent your units. You may not be able to refinance the units when you think you're going to. There's all these risks that the SEC mandates be disclosed. And for purposes of valuing those investments, you pretty much consider the same risk when you're looking at calculating an estimated fair market value, which is then used to convert the Roth. And it generates substantial savings on that value that you're going to pay your Roth conversion tax on. And so not only are you in an asset space that historically has returned higher than above average or returned above average rates economically, but you're sitting in a very, very tax advantaged spot when it comes to Roth conversions. And Dan, you know, when you look at the throughput that a dollar can achieve in these types of investments, it's pre-tax, and then it gets moved over to Roth, it's pretty impressive.
It is. I agree. The Roth account is the way to go these days, truly, for retirement planning purposes, I believe. And it's so cheap, and I use that in quotes, these days, so inexpensive relative to what it could cost you over those, maybe 20 or even 30 years of retirement. It's just a tremendous savings if you get into it today.
Well,
get it done.
Yeah, and you're talking about even, just the current participant. You're not really thinking about the heirs and the impact on the heirs of being able to have money that's already been taxed. And
I think might be the more important thing, it's for years. This is a dynasty thing almost that's created. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, there's no doubt more and more people are starting to understand it's not just about saving income tax. There's so many other angles here to consider. And Dan, as far as when you've got money invested in these real estate private partnerships and you convert to Roth, is it a significant entanglement? Is it hard to do it? Do you have to get permission from the syndicator, sponsor, lead partner to convert your money from a pre-tax side of a 401 trust over to the Roth side? Or is it pretty fluid?
You talking about if you're in the real estate partnership?
Well, I guess if you're in any partnership, but specifically our focus is real estate private partnerships, and your answer is correct. We don't have to ask permission. We don't even have to notify. The investor is the 401 trust. And then within the trust, it's akin to maybe a duplex if you were thinking about a property, a rental property, where you've got two sides of the trust. You've got the pre-tax and you've got the Roth. And the ability to do an in-plan rollover or conversion is something that doesn't cause any external static at all. I mean, you may have, you will have tax due potentially on the Roth conversion. In fact, you will have, you may or may not, on an in-plan rollover. Like, for instance, if you make the mega backdoor Roth strategy your focus and you contribute voluntary after-tax dollars into the plan, and then you pretty quickly thereafter do an in-plan rollover to the Roth, there wouldn't be tax, or maybe there would be a few dollars of tax if you had some earnings during the period that it's set in the voluntary after-tax account before being moved to the Roth account. But, you know, these are transfers or conversions that, again, don't require permission. Nobody has to know on the syndicator end, nor would they care unless they've got to do a bunch of extra work to recast or relist, you know, the individual investor, et cetera, which they do not. So we find it to be a win-win all the way around. Dan, let's do this. We're about halfway through. When we come back, we're going to talk about a couple of real estate syndications this week that caught our eye, and whatever else might come up. And, you know, I will defer to you on some of the details on those once we get back here. We'll be back in just a few minutes with more of the Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and Dan DuBose.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross, right here on AM 700 KSEV.
If you're looking to sell or buy a home and in need of the best realtors out there, look no further than the Matthews team at RE/MAX Legends. Ronnie and Kathy Matthews have instilled in each and every team member their hard work and honest values, and believe me, it's paid off. This incredible team's agents has an average tenure of over 10 years, so it's clear that the Matthews team truly knows the Houston area market and what it takes to get a home sold quickly. They're employee-owned, they care about their clients, and they always go the extra mile to ensure that each sale and purchase is seamless and smooth. The Matthews team are the number one RE/MAX team in Texas and have been for over 20 years. Call the Matthews team at 281-440-7900 or see for yourself and go online at ronnieandkathy.com. They sell over 900 homes a year, and they know every inch of the buying and selling market in the greater Houston area. Call the Matthews team. I chose them as my realtor, and you should too. The Matthews team and RE/MAX Legends, your realtor for life. 281-440-7900. That's 281-440-7900.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, corner. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make demands. Look like a woman, think like a man. Be as good as or better than. Gotta woman up and take it like a man.
Okay, welcome back to the second half of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and my associate Dan DuBose. And for those of you that would like to ask us a question, you're welcome to text us, 713 area 581-0195, or send us an email to info@npross.com. And if you're thinking you might be interested in learning more about the real estate private partnership syndication world, feel free to contact us during the week, either via our website at baplanner.com. We've got some intake forms that will help us assess whether we might be able to help you meet your objectives in that regard. Dan, we're going to talk about a couple transactions that are, I guess, that came across our radar this week that are currently in play, I guess it were. May or may not be in play, depends on your specific facts and circumstances. And before we talk about those, let's talk about what do people need that might think, hey, this is a way that I can catch up on my retirement savings or get ahead, as the case may be. And I'm just curious, Dan, what does it take? What does somebody have to have? Do they need a college degree? Do they need a real estate license, prior experience in this real estate Asian market? What does it take? How much money does it take? Let's talk about that as well.
You know, a typical deal we look at is could be as low as $25,000 to get into a deal. But, you know, behind that, you got to have some knowledge. You got to be able to study a deal and have a, you know, reasonable knowledge that there's it's appropriate for you. I think the real estate is an animal in itself, and it is a great animal as far as investment is concerned for the long term. You got to think long term typically with it. It's not a trading asset by any stretch, but it is one that can really pay off in the long run. You know, 3-5 years is a typical deal that we look at. It could be, you know, even longer than that. You know, people buy houses, and that's a pretty good buy for your, I'm talking about your personal residence. That's a real estate deal that's, you know, you're going to get some utility out of it for sure, but the investment is going to be well, for the most part, has been.
Yeah, maybe not in Houston, but certainly in other parts of the country. I mean, I've got clients that bought houses in California, you know, 30 years ago that are now multimillionaires just off their personal residence. And,
it's crazy.
You know, it's hard to feel sorry for them owing tax on the sale of their principal residence, right? I mean, most of us in Houston would struggle. I think I've had one client in 37 years that exceeded. Now, we're talking about, I guess it's less than 37 when you figure the law changed, but I can't remember. How long has it been, Dan, since the 250,000 exclusion for exemption for single and 500 for married filing joint came into play? What's it been, 15 years or so?
Maybe. Many years, yeah.
Yeah, but whatever that time frame is, I've had one client that had a principal residence in the city of Houston that broke through that 500,000 barrier, and it wasn't by much. It was like $5,000 or $10,000. And so, you know, Houston, theoretically, I know going back when I was a youngster and started my practice back in 1985, I had, it was a classic conversation at least three times a year, and Dan, I know you did too, where the husband and wife would come in and meet, you know, maybe pass off their tax data, and the question was always, and I'll let you guess who was asking this, Shouldn't we buy a bigger house? Won't we get a better deal tax-wise? Because we'll get to deduct all that interest. And my answer, and by the way, which spouse do you think was typically the one asking that, Dan? Any ideas?
The wife.
Yeah, I'm putting that off on you. That's exactly right. Never had a husband ask that question, strangely enough. But anyway, for whatever reason. But, you know, my response was always, no, you shouldn't. If you're asking me an economic question, the answer is no. Now, if you're asking me a lifestyle choice or for tangible reasons, like my wife, you know, the reason we're in a single family home versus a condo, which would be my preference at my age, is because she wanted green grass under her son's feet when he was out playing in the yard. And, you know, that's easier accomplished with a single family home. But, you know, my answer back then was, no, it's a lifestyle choice. And if you could be disciplined enough, you should rent. And I bet I went 25 years before I started hearing mainstream financial planners start to echo those comments. And the new generation of young professional, and I've lost track of what they call them, is that, that's not Gen X, is it? Millennials, okay. They got it. They would rather rent so that they've got the really, it's in their case, maybe it may be more about freedom to move around, take a different job or whatever. But bottom line is, if you can be disciplined enough, save the difference. In most cases, now that rates are trickling back up between renting and buying and invest it, I don't think there's any question you come out ahead. But in any event, you know, going back to the questions I was raising, you don't need a college education. You can start where you're at today with respect to most of the variables. You don't need a real estate license. In fact, I would tell you you're wasting your time to get a real estate license if you're wanting to generate passive income. And we are talking about passive here. We will do a show at some point, maybe next week, on active, because clearly most of our clients are taking passive roles with these projects where they invest their money. They don't have to go get the mortgage, the syndicator, the sponsor, the lead partner, whatever you want to call that party. They take care of that, which that's a big deal with most people, most investors. Most of our clients do not want to be the lead on a, I don't know what, Dan, a $25 to $50 million loan. And yet it's not as, yeah. But it's not as onerous as it might sound. I mean, in the commercial real estate market, the property, the cash flow, the net operating income from the property in large measure is what's shouldering that burden, unless you sign a joint and several guarantee, which then, of course, you're in the bullseye if anything goes wrong with the property generating substantial or significant revenues and net operating income to make that loan payment. But bottom line is, as a passive investor, you're not required to go do that. And again, that right there makes it feasible for most people that have, I don't know, I think you said the minimum investment, Dan, on a lot of these transactions is $25,000 or so. I would tell you want at least $100,000 to $200,000 if you're going to significantly change your go forward. And then we look to find transactions where your money will essentially double or thereabouts on average now, about every 4 to 5 years. And, you know, when I say on average, I'm saying, hey, it doesn't happen necessarily in the first 3 or 4 years, but when you add up, if you're holding the property for 7 years, which is probably a pretty common metric, you know, by the time you account for your interim cash flows, which would be from operations, in other words, rents exceeded expenses for the period that you got a distribution, and then you add that to the occasional refinance where you're refinancing, I don't know, I've seen anywhere from 50 to 100% of your initial investment out after maybe 3 years, 4 years. And then you add the gain from exit maybe 3 or 4 years after that, that's where I'm suggesting that on average, you're going to double your money over, you know, each four-year period. Pretty compelling argument for this asset space. But in any event, it is easy to get started as a passive. It's primarily having the capital. And then depending on whether you're an accredited investor with $1 million of net worth, not counting your principal residence or the equity in your principal residence, or you're non-accredited but have achieved sophisticated status, which is for those with less than $1 million in net worth. And sophisticated status is, you know, something you achieve by taking some training, by working with a CPA firm, for instance, like us, that, you know, this is what we do. We understand real estate, private partnership syndications, and according to the SEC definition of sophisticated, we fit right in that camp. And if you have that, then you're ready to go. And that doesn't mean you're ready to go invest. It means you're ready to start, you know, get onto the playing field to where then we can start looking at transactions that will help you understand the math on. We don't invest your money. We are not registered investment advisors, don't want to be registered investment advisors. We are CPAs that understand the math on real estate private partnership syndications, and our goal is to help you understand what you're signing up for and making sure that you understand what the legal agreements that you're executing mean, and, you know, all the terms and conditions that you're agreeing to in advance without really understanding it unless you've done it many times. And even then, the playing field is constantly changing in terms of what's out there. Dan, which transaction you want to talk about first, the RV park or apartment deal? I think we've got those two set aside for today.
Yeah, the RV park is quite interesting. It's a change from what we usually talk about in the multifamily world, but it really is quite a deal on the surface. It just looks like it's just one that should jump into your investing pocket. It's quite unusual.
Yeah, it's almost like a foreign animal here when we mention the numbers that we're going to. It's like, are you guys sure you're looking at the right financial metrics here? Because these numbers, I don't think we've ever talked about a deal with an IRR as high as this one. What's the internal rate of return pro forma?
Well, they say 46%, I think it was. It's 40. Really off the screen, off the chart,
yeah,
as they say.
Yeah, 42.01 to be exact. The equity multiple is within the realm of what we've seen before, but even that's fairly high. Certainly exceeds our target, which, if you'll recall, our target broken down by month is 0.0463. And let's see, this is a 3.84.
Over
3.84. If we divide that by 60, that's 0.064. So that's about a 50%. Wait a minute, I'm sorry, I'm being a little bit rich there. Call it, 35-40% higher than we might seek. And then what's the targeted annual cash-on-cash rate, Dan, you remember?
9%.
Well, the one I'm looking at is 14.5. You may have the apartment deal mixed up there, but if we're looking at the RV portfolio that the group out of Dallas is doing, I see right here on their email transmittal, 42.01 IRR, 3.84 equity multiple, targeted annual cash on cash is 14.5. The investment hold is 5 years, minimum investment $75,000. You know, even if they're wrong by half, it's a pretty good pro forma. And it is pro forma, let's be clear. You know, nothing has happened except they've got some acreage under construction. I mean, under contract, I believe, at this point. Dan, what's the give us a little bit more of the details about what their business plan entails. It's interesting, and it's name brand type players.
$670 million purchase, and that's way higher than what we're used to looking at. But it consists of 22 different properties, which is each one of these properties is its own individual subsidiary of the master entity that's going to control all these. Each one stands alone. Each one is its own entity. It's each one will have its own loan. They got projecting a 65% loan to cost, which is significant. Which is, I think it's
significant. And this is buying out mainly mom and pop type owners. In case you're wondering, how are they getting these metrics? I believe it's a $420 million purchase, and then they're spending another $250 on expanding. They're getting acreage with this purchase that'll allow them to build out another 1,500 pads. I think they're starting with 4,200 pads, and then they're partnering with one of the leading resort companies in the country, and they'll all be rebranded under the Margaritaville Resort's name. So pretty impressive. I mean, this is scale that's, I mean, this would be a big deal if it were in the apartment realm, right? I mean, forget about RV parks, but if they were spending this much money, which they have before. In fact, full disclosure, I invested in a 10-property portfolio that this same group did, and it was actually less money, I believe, overall than this RV transaction is. And I think, you know, dealing with the top management company in this space and one of the top resort operators, they've set themselves up to essentially take a bunch of maybe C-level properties that they're going to convert to an A or A+. And it's interesting that they feel they can do that. That they will tell you that you probably couldn't do that with apartments, and I'm in agreement. It'd be very difficult to do that with apartments. But this is a different class of asset, and this would be akin to, you know, in the hotel space. I've seen brands move both ways. I've seen, in fact, there's a Sheraton right there in Houston at Clay Road that used to be the top level Sheraton, and now it's a Four Points Sheraton. So it came down, I don't know what, a step or two, Dan? I've forgotten their different brands. But, you know, I've also seen properties that went the other way where the, you know, a hotel that, I can't think of a good example, but let's say it was a Four Points and it went up to, you know, the top level Sheraton. That happens. And again, hospitality properties are a bit different than apartment buildings, where you kind of are, as one of my mentors said, you know, you can walk into the nearest Walmart to an area where you're thinking about buying a property, and you can get a really good flavor for exactly what level, A, B, C, D, et cetera, that property is. And you're probably not going to change it more than maybe half an asset class if you're lucky, no matter what you do, because that's the character of the neighborhood. Well, hotels are a little bit different, and it's not uncommon to have maybe a Crown Plaza in an area that you might not call, you know, an apartment building next to it an A or a B even, right? And so that's interesting. But Dan, what are some of the other parts of the business plan that you think give this the metrics that it's going to need to achieve these goals? Is there any talk about the rental rates or add-on amenities that they're going to put in place?
Yeah, one of the things they do is they're going to, you know, have, you speak of the Margaritaville, you know, that restaurants, they say they're going to have up to three restaurants at the different locations. So, they want to keep you at their place once they get you there instead of you're going into town to do your,
yeah,
your restauranting, your eating, yeah, whatever. Come to their restaurants, their own site. They've got cooking stations, you know, which you can use to invite people over and such as that. I mean, it's, they're really pretty what they're doing. You know, they're taking, as you mentioned, mom and pops where they might have a grass parking or, you know, some kind of rock parking. They're making it concrete pads. They're very, it's very.
Yeah, this pretty, is at base, not your dad's KOA, right? That's the brand I remember from back in the day. And we were lucky to have, I think they had showers on site on those. But, you know, internet became a real thing at some point, but it's nowhere near the class of this. Hey, we've got to move quick to the apartment transaction. We've only got about 7 minutes left here. Do you want to talk about the deal? Now, this is, by the way, the RV park was a 506C transaction, I believe. Was that right, Dan? You recall confirming
right.
that?
It is.
So that transaction you might or might not be able to get into if you're accredited, you know, here after the fact, quote unquote. You know, they've already started, I believe they started raising capital. This transaction we're getting ready to talk about is a 506B, and it's also exclusive to one of the real estate investor platforms based in Houston. So you won't be able to join it unless you're already on the syndicators list. But Dan, give us the highlights. How many units generally? What's the location, and how is this thing going to make money?
It's a 120-unit built in 1972, Class C, or really a Class C minus, probably the way they talk about it. It's an all-cash deal, which is significant, I believe, is it not? All cash? Getting a discount of some 20% off of...
Yeah, it's not the first time we've seen it, certainly, but it does, it poses opportunities, and I don't know, I've seen syndicators say it's less risk the more cash you put in. I'm going to tell you, if it is less risk, it's also less of a return, right, because you've got no leverage that you're sharing the profits on with the lender, but...
But when you're buying it this cheap, do you not get some of that leverage that's available? Because we're buying this thing at about $58,000 a unit. I mean, that's
well, there's no question that will help offset some of that. And
this is a mom and pop that's just been ignored over the years, and they're talking about doubling rents almost, or doubling the bottom line, almost double the rent, double the bottom line. It's and even with a 6.5% cap rate, which I think is most where it should be these days, is in 3 or 4 years they're talking about with a 6.5%, they're almost doubling value. It's pretty significant, I believe. The operator has a good history within that group, I understand. So it could work. I mean, it's a real deal that could be a really, really good rep for the, you know, one that's got the long-term plan involved.
Well, and it's close to another property they already own. I always like to see that. That gives me a lot of confidence when people have been to the finish line before, and especially when they've been to the finish line in the same general market. I mean, they obviously know what that market or that tertiary market or, you know, however close it is. This, I believe, is only a couple miles away. So I would say it's likely the same market, although I don't know that city well enough to tell you. But, Dan, what type of, you mentioned a cap rate of 6 or 6.5. I presume that was on exit, right?
That's
what
great.
Are they buying at?
Showing a 5.
Okay, and so that's, you know, that's in line certainly with what we're seeing. Any idea what the cash on cash rate of return, just the range, is? I don't know that we've got an AAR, an average annual rate, but I see
it's very low for the first 2 years simply because they've got to get this thing back in order. They had they're taking it up to a 7% on projection.
Yeah, but
2 years it won't have any cash flow.
Yeah, it's definitely a value add, so they'll be working hard to convert or transition the property up to market. And let's see, there was something else that I thought, the way this deal's being managed fee-wise, isn't this the one where the lead was taking zero promote until they get their money, get the investors their money back? That's significant. Yeah, even for this group with their normal lead partner compensation guide wires, I think if I'm a passive looking at this from the outside, that ought to get your interest right away, that they're willing to put their own skin on the line effectively by not taking the compensation that you would normally see. I think, I'm not for sure, but I think on a deal like this, it would normally be a 20% promote. And I don't know, maybe they catch up on that on the back end, but hey, you get your money back and maybe a little bit of profit. And I'd say the lead deserves to get back what they may have passed on. Let's see, Dan, I know we're bumping up against the clock here. One last comment or so about this deal?
You know, I'm just amazed that it's an all cash. I guess it's got to be when you got a 70% occupancy rate. You know, there's not many lenders that want to jump on that deal.
Yeah. I would note that on a refi, they're pro forma-ing about an 87% return after 5 years. So it's not the richest deal, but it's not, you know, again, it sets the stage. And if rates go crazy, this might be one that you'll look very favorably upon down the road. Let's do this, Dan. Let's go ahead and close up here. And just, again, every week seems like this point gets here faster than we expect. But we've got about a minute left, and I appreciate you coming on once again. And I look forward to us convening same time, same station next Sunday, 7 a.m. What else? Okay, you bet. Thank you, Dan. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Be sure to tune in next Saturday at 5 for another edition of Be a Planner Show here on AM 700 KSEB.